Hi, welcome to Webcams TV. I'm one of your hosts, Brady Gaster, and this is your other host, Corey Fowler, my partner in crime on the show. And today, we have a pretty exciting show scheduled for you. Standing between us, you'll see Nir Mishkowski. Nir is the program manager lead for the Windows Azure Websites team. So if you've got any Windows Azure websites, you have this guy to thank for it, because his team was the one that put in all the hours and the hard work. There's a bunch of other teams, but we like to give him the credit.
So. And if you don't like it, it's Brady's.
Right. If you don't like it, send me a tweet. Yeah. Not him. You will see his Twitter handle in a second, so you know you can pick one. Nir being on the show today actually kicks off sort of the next evolution in the Webcams TV show. As Corey said, was your butterfly metaphor?
Yeah, we're now a beautiful butterfly coming out of our cocoon phase.
Right.
Yeah.
And he wonders why I pick on him. Anyway, with that being said, we'd like to introduce the first one of the new segments that we're going to be doing each week in the show, and we call it the Websites Window. And what we're going to do in the Websites Window is to show you each week like kind of a window into the Windows Azure Websites team. And we're going to have either Nir or Yohai from his team or one of the other guys on his team to kind of come in and do a 5 to 10 minute segment to introduce whatever they've done in the last week and they've released it. So we'll kind of keep you abreast of all the new stuff that's coming out related to Windows Azure Websites. The first one of those we're actually going to do right now. Corey, I'll turn it over to you so you can talk about the new App Gallery items.
Yeah, great. So hopefully you've had time to play around in the new portal since the June launch. I know that we featured it quite a bit on the show. So essentially now when you go into the gallery, you can see that Composite C1 CMS is now a new item within there. So basically, you can go in and install it. Do you want to just go over and show it off there, Nir, on the next?
Yeah, you can go over and do the configuration steps. I won't waste our time going through that. Here's one that I've already installed. It's a pretty quick installation, a couple of button clicks. What's nice about this particular CMS, it supports several technologies. It's all .NET based, but it has the ability to be based on HTML or Razor syntax or XML and XSLT.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. I think there was another new addition too, wasn't there?
Yep. Correct. Yep. Yeah. So there's also the addition of PHPBB, mm-hmm. Which is a bulletin board form system. So basically you can add this now straight from the gallery. So it's a very simple click-through installer. As far as I know, this uses Windows Azure SQL Database as the data backend.
Correct. This one specifically is a version where we worked with PHPBB folks to make sure it works with SQL Azure.
Great.
And this is just, again, a quick example of what happens after you install it. So again, a new addition. With the App Gallery, we're trying to be faster at adding more applications, and hopefully we'll be able to announce them as they come in.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. And speaking of PHP, I think Corey has an announcement to make.
Yeah, I was just at CakeFest, which is Cake PHP's annual event over in Manchester, England. So it was really exciting to be there amongst the folks in Manchester and learning a little bit more about Cake and showing them how they can get their stuff onto Windows Azure.
Cool. Cool. And I'm actually going to be taking a couple of trips coming up here pretty soon as well. One of them is to go to a conference that's going to be in Stockholm, Sweden at the end of September, and it's called Cloudburst. And there's the URL for Cloudburst. Take a peek at it. And I'm going to be actually talking about Windows Azure Websites. And I'm going to be doing a couple of demos where I use things like a .NET Gadgeteer to actually communicate with a Windows Azure Website service or two. I have a couple of demos put together. Earlier in the same week, I'm going to be doing the Belgian user group. And I think we're having a nerd dinner in Belgium as well. So if you're in Belgium or Sweden, I'd love to see you at one of those events. And we can talk about websites and anything else in Azure that you have questions about. And we have one other announcement. I think just came out last week.
Ah, yes. So just announced was Windows Azure Mobile Services. Mm-hmm. So before now, you would have basically had to build out any kind of mobile backend that you needed for your site. So you end up having to host that yourself. With Windows Azure Mobile Services, essentially, we provide the backend for you and some functionality to interact with our backend, and it basically allows you to just focus on the parts that you know, which would be the mobile application,
awesome.
Instead of having to know how to deploy and write all the server-side code to deal with
cool.
your mobile app awesome. Scenarios.
It's also exciting for us in the Windows Azure website team because actually the back end for the mobile services is Windows Azure website.
Nice.
So
nice.
Those new back ends are actually sites on our infrastructure. And also one thing to mention is that this release is focused on Windows 8. So cool. You Windows 8 developers out there, now you can have your back end in a box and go develop great applications.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And speaking of mobile services, one of the guys on our team, Nick Harris, you probably know him from CloudCover. Nick Harris is going to be on the show in the next couple of days with Josh Twist, who is one of the guys behind mobile services. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start to talk about kind of what mobile services means to a web developer. Obviously, it runs on Windows Azure websites. So Josh is going to kind of go through some of the architecture, some of the underpinning, and explain to you sort of how it works on top of the Windows Azure websites offering. All those announcements out of the way, speaking of Windows Azure websites, we're going to turn it over to Nir and kind of let him do a deep dive on the internals of Windows Azure websites and kind of how some of the stuff works. If you saw him at TechEd Europe, you might have seen some of these things, but he's going to kind of give you a deep dive today into how it works. So without turning over to Nir, let him show us what's up.
Thanks, guys. So we're going to talk a little bit about the how Windows Azure website was architected. I think I wanted just to start real quick with our mission statement, kind of like why we decided to do it the way we did. Some of our kind of design patterns or design principles are right here on this slide. We wanted people to be able to create websites in seconds. We wanted them to be able to do it very quickly. We wanted them to be able to start simple, build their application, and not worry about anything. So a lot of the stuff you've seen us do and demo in the past is how much Windows Azure website is similar to IIS. Mm-hmm. So if you're a .NET developer, PHP developer, or Node.js developer, everything you do on IIS or on your local version, kind of on IIS Express, if you're not connected, you should expect to work on Windows Azure website. So we're very proud of doing that work. We are allowing people to use these different frameworks as well as different clients. So mm-hmm. we're not stuck with Windows to the extent. This is a cloud product, so you can use your Mac to write the code or Linux. And then it's very easy to deploy. So I think you've seen, I won't show too many demos today, but I'm sure you've seen demos in previous episodes and future ones and how easy it is to publish to Windows Azure website. So we support several ways. You can publish via FTP, you can use Git, or you can use a web deploy, and all of these things are getting improved. So in the future, hopefully in the near future, you'll see some more announcements around the GitHub integration and how even easier it's going to be to use.
Cool.
So this is kind of the reason of why some of this architecture you'll see is there. Another thing to kind of make sure that we talk about is that Windows Azure website comes in two flavors. There's the flavor that is on Windows Azure, and then there's the hosting flavor that is available for hosters. It was announced in WPC in July, and that keeps developing. It's basically we allow our hosting partners to have the same greatness of Windows Azure websites on their prem, and they can go resell those to their customers. So yes. Some of the design patterns you'll see are really connected to making sure this thing works both on Azure and on a normal network.
Awesome.
So, you know, I think that this kind of curious baby has been staring at us for a while. You think it's creepy, right?
It is a little bit creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Those of us with kids are looking at it differently.
Exactly.
But you know, some of the things that we kind of focused on are here on this list. Cloud First by Design. Really kind of a focus on saying you don't have to worry about servers at all or boxes. Everything in Windows Azure website is virtualized. We take care of the actual physical machine or the VM that you run on. Mm-hmm. If those VM fails, we automatically bounce you to new VMs. And you as a developer, again, you don't have to worry about the machine you're running on. Mm-hmm. Although we provide support for you to be able to define and consume environment variables, and if we get to that, we can talk about it a bit more.
Cool.
SQL-based configuration. Some of the issues with IIS scalability are around hosting all of the site configurations in one big XML file, sitehost.config. We move that into SQL Server, and that allows us to achieve much larger density in our multi-tenant environment.
Nice.
For those of you who don't know, we support two modes today. We have the shared mode, where it's a free 10 websites for users. And we have the reserved mode, where a whole VM is dedicated to all the websites that that you use. So one clarification is, in the reserved mode, we support people having CNAME. And when you move to reserved mode, you can have as many as 100 websites on one box with unlimited amount of CNAMEs. Nice. Map to them. So it's not kind of a one-to-one thing.
One thing that I've noticed on Stack Overflow is there's a number of people that are interested in knowing if once they move to reserved instances, mm-hmm. is that their own physical cloud service? Or is that just a reserved part of Windows Azure websites that's dedicated to them?
So it's essentially one. Windows Azure website in general is just a cloud service. Mm-hmm. We've implemented it on top of the Azure stack, which is great. What you get when you get a reserved box, you get your own VM indeed, but this VM is completely managed by Windows Azure website. So some of the functionality you would expect if this was a web role is not available to you. You cannot RDP into the box or go install some stuff yourself. You cannot run the startup tasks. That's kind of the bad thing about it. The positive thing is that because it's part of Windows Azure website, we manage the failover for you. So even if you have a reserved box, and this reserved box fails for some reason, we'll actually bounce you to another machine. Windows Azure website in the background actually keeps a set of reserved boxes that are free all the time in order to be able to bounce people around.
Cool, great, cool. And I've noticed, mm-hmm. actually upgraded recently from a shared instance to a reserved instance, mm-hmm. and I was shocked how quickly it happened. Like as soon as I switched, I hit my sites and they were all still up.
Yeah, so. And we'll talk about it in a second. That's another thing where we're very proud of the ability to go and change your mode of compute very cool. quickly, essentially in real time. And when I get into the architecture, I can explain how it's done. And the other kind of things that that we've done, dynamic provisioning. That means that basically we will launch your website based on a lot of other kind of smart circumstances. So we're going to look at it and say, you know what, here's a box that doesn't have any tenants right now, okay. or has a very low CPU utilization. That's where your website is going to launch when you're in the shared mode.
Cool.
Another big question that comes from users all the time is, what's going on with a paid shared version? Mm-hmm. So essentially a cheaper option for people to get the CNAME. That's in the works. We should be able to announce dates very soon. And I know I've been saying that for a while now, but it's coming. The other thing that's important to talk about is network storage. Basically, all of the content is stored in one location. That solves, again, the problem of reliability. In case a front-end machine goes away, your network share contains all of your content. Mm-hmm. And that means that some of the issues of multi-tenancy are also solved. So if you have two instances of the same website, you're still writing to one content share.
Cool.
And in some design patterns, you have to think about that when you build stuff. Nice. The stateless web servers I talked about, basically, our web servers don't matter to an extent. They just run the sites based on availability and based on the best allocation.
Cool.
And then the load balancing, that's another kind of the parts of our secret sauce, is where we accept the calls for websites and, again, decide what is the best place to run them.
Cool.
So I'll move into some of kind of the fancy architecture slides that I've made. As you notice, I'm really great at graphical design here.
I actually like it.
Oh, thank you. It has boxes and ovals and everything. So this kind of represents the flow process of just launching a new website on Windows Azure websites. So the traffic will come from the Azure load balancer. It will hit our own load balancer that is implemented with the application request router module of IIS. So we basically went and extended this thing. What it does, it will go and talk to the runtime database. The runtime database is where we host all of the metadata about your website. So when you went and registered in the Azure Management Portal,
right.
some records went into this database and said, okay, you have this website, and you're in the, let's start with the reserved, not the reserved, but actually with the shared mode. We'll talk to this database and say, okay, is this website or host header actually valid? The answer may be yes. In that case, we will go and say, okay, which one of the web servers is most available to us? A runtime database actually contains a list of all of the web servers, as well as their current memory allocation and CPU load.
Cool.
And it actually looks, and that updates every 30 seconds or so. it finds the best box and then transfers the traffic to that box. So your call goes and hits that web server. That web server will go back to the runtime database and say, okay, I got this call, I'm supposed to launch this website. It will check again if this is valid. That's yet another security check. And if the site is indeed valid, it will go and take the data from that runtime database and construct a website on the fly. So it will create all the necessary config files and map the storage, the share to the storage controller.
Cool.
So basically your content is going to be now mapped to a location on our storage controller, which is this component down here. The website database is, again, if for like the example of PHPBB, if you choose to have a database that runs with your website, the linkage is done for you automatically. So in your configuration files, you should see the connections thing.
Gotcha. Cool.
Okay.
Nice.
So this is kind of the vanilla flow, if you will. I think that that's the last kind of part of the flow that we haven't shown is basically once your website is loaded, the traffic will go back to the load balancer and go back out.
Cool.
I think this is actually wrong because the traffic should go directly to the Azure load balancer.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, now it goes back out.
Cool.
So let's see what happens if I have a hot site. So in the previous case, the site was seen for the first time. I went into the Azure management portal and registered and launched it for the first time. So the site never existed on a web server.
Gosh.
In this case, the site is actually there. The load balancer will have some kind of cache. It says, here are the sites that are currently loaded, and then it will directly pass you to the web server. The content is loaded from the storage controller, and we're off to the races.
Right.
If some of you noticed, and now we know from some user research that most people don't use more than one instance, you are able to have more than one instance of your website running.
Gotcha.
So we have several dozens of these web servers even in the shared infrastructure on Windows Azure website, and you can have more than one instance running. If that case happens and you have more than one instance of your website, basically what the ARR will do is a vanilla round robin algorithm.
Cool.
It will go to the next one all the time.
Nice.
We do support a sticky session for ASP.NET applications in case someone is worried about that, or anticipated your next question.
Right. So if you're doing some traditional session utilization, the sticky session will actually make sure you land in the right spot.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
awesome.
But every time, like any web application, if you're planning to have more than one instance, you should think about your session persistence, which is, again, just something that any website should think about.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned ASP.NET, but does that... is that statement true for Node.js and PHP?
It depends on technology. If it's a sticky session that's implemented using a cookie, that should work.
Okay.
Some other techniques of sticky sessions, like having an IP range, have not been implemented as of yet.
Okay.
Cool.
But you can just experiment and see if your framework supports that.
Yep.
And then again, the traffic goes back through the load balancer to Azure.
Cool.
So this is kind of a diagram that shows us kind of the logical units inside our Windows Azure website farm. So we talked a lot about how a website gets activated. There are several other components that make the magic happen. When you think about what happens in the portal when you design or create a new website, the portal actually sits on top of a set of REST APIs. One of those REST APIs belongs to the Windows Azure website. And that allows us to do some simple tasks like create a website, delete a website, update it, and so on and so forth. That's also available to our CLI command line tools that you can download for Windows, Linux, and Mac.
Cool.
The same activities are there. So basically, the API front end will get hit, and a new website will get created. As we discussed before, the runtime database is going to get a message that says, hey, here's a new website with this host header. It's on that particular plan of let's say, paid shared or paid reserved. And then the storage controller will get an allocation as well. So Brady created a new website. That's going to be in a database. And he's also going to get a share on the storage controller.
Cool. Gotcha.
The next thing that will happen is that we... allocate some kind of publishing credentials.
Okay.
For FTP and for web deploy, those are username, password, file that is available to download from the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And for Git, this is just essentially a web service endpoint that can be used to put in your username and password.
Cool.
The deployment servers implement the endpoint for web deploy and FTP, because we need a static IP address for right. that. For Git, you're hitting the web server directly. And what happens when you deploy is essentially you push your bits up to the deployment server. The deployment server will put it on the storage location,
cool.
in the storage controller.
Nice.
In case of a Git push, you're pushing it directly to your website,
okay.
where it will go again into that storage controller, because nice. The website is mapped to the storage controller.
So with Git, it sort of bypasses one of those steps, goes
Correct.
Directly in. Okay.
Yes.
Good to know.
Yeah. Again, the reason for that is FTP protocol requires us to have a direct IP address,
mm-hmm.
and that's on Azure is available for a special set of roles, if you will.
Gotcha. Cool.
So I think we talked a little bit about the databases running on SQL Azure or SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
SQL databases.
Mm-hmm. Windows Azure SQL
Databases. Windows
Azure
SQL Database. My apologies. The storage is implemented using Azure Blobs, where we have added some specific implementations to expose those as SMB shares for as far as the websites are concerned. And then the websites themselves are running on essentially worker roles that have some Windows Azure website special bits, if you will.
Cool. Good to know.
A little bit of a deep dive into what happens inside the actual web server itself. So we talked a lot about the routing of the kind of calls and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What did we do inside the web server? In order to implement a system that actually supports multi-tenancy, as well as the ability to control how many resources people are using. When you use our free option, you will notice that you're limited to a certain amount of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's 165 GB a day,
mm-hmm.
and you're limited to a certain amount of memory and CPU. The way we do that is by actually meter your consumption of these resources and,
mm-hmm.
and putting quotas on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we implement the multi-tenancy is by what we call the dynamic Windows activation service. For those of you who are deep into IIS, you know that IIS uses Windows activation service to launch processes. We have the dynamic version, and specifically it's dynamic because it uses the database, as I described before,
gotcha.
To consume the marching orders about the website.
Gotcha.
So it's smart enough to say, okay, this website has to run with this amount of resources, it will pull the information from the database and then go apply these quotas to your database,
cool.
To your website. And that allows us to be very generic. We can say, okay, here's a web server that can run 10,000 websites, or here's a web server that is allowed to run 100, like your reserved instance.
Right.
So all of that is running on the same kind of specific infrastructure.
While we're mm-hmm. on the topic of metering,
mm-hmm.
So basically, you have a five-hour window, and I've been mm-hmm. asked a number of times, how is it possible to have a website run 24 hours a day, but only have a five-hour quota? Are you actually deactivating some websites in the back end here?
That is correct.
When they're inactive?
Yeah, so one of the kind of, again, the quote-unquote special sauce for us is that we control, and we got some questions about people wanting to know how when they can control the activation and deactivation of their app pool. One of the things that we control in the shared version is the fact that we decide when to turn it on and off. So
okay.
when your site gets hits, it will definitely be in memory and running unless you've exceeded your quota.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not getting hits, we will essentially turn it off and we'll deactivate it. I believe there's a configurable time window for that. I wouldn't want to quote it here because I'm not sure. I think it changes also based on load. So we will let you stay in memory more time if no one else is trying to use that memory.
Gotcha.
So basically what would happen is we only count those 5 hours against time that you're actually running.
Yep.
Okay.
Cool. Good mm-hmm. to
know. I think that's kind of the deeper level, like you said, in what happens in the website, inside the web server itself. We have the metering service that
mm-hmm.
Kind of monitors and controls how much resources people use.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the DWAS service that can construct a website based on instructions from a database or a central storage and generate the website on the fly.
Cool. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to touch on the scaling option. I know that that's been discussed a lot, and a lot of people have questions about it. So we have essentially right now two options to scale. Right? Mm-hmm. So, and maybe you would argue that's the only ways to scale in nature, but I'm sure someone will come up with something else. But basically, you can scale out and scale up.
Okay.
Scaling out is for applications where you know that they are stateless. Right? You don't try to your local file storage. You have some kind of a session or persistence approach, like a database or some kind of a shared caching mode where you actually not care which physical web server gets the hit. I think it's very good for web API type scenarios and for things like that. Then you can use our scale out. We allow for three instances of scaling out, the same app will run in three different boxes. You can have that in our shared in our free shared option or in our reserved option. So even when you have a reserved instance, let's say you have an application that's really high end and gets a lot of heat, you can have that application running on more than one web server.
Nice.
So if you're familiar with our UX, you have the slider, you can just pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually recommend the scale out option for people who want to increase their throughput. Right.
Okay.
So again, for a web API type deal where you have some, you know, database updates, or you want to run a calculation in the cloud or what have you.
Yep.
If you just see you get a lot of hits, you can just scale this out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you have to be making sure that your app is really multi-instance safe,
right.
If you will.
Right.
The scale up is kind of a way of supporting traditional web applications or helping people that don't really care about making sure that their app is safe. So some of the app gallery apps may use local files to save some state or to save some UX changes and so on. In the scale-up version, basically what happens is you get your own web server. Mm-hmm. This web server is still managed by us in Windows Azure website, but all of the CPU and all the bandwidth belongs to you.
Cool.
Bandwidth will get charged for after the free version, the free allocation of this 165 MB. And the cost right now is discounted cost for the compute, which is 8 cents per
Compute hour.
Okay.
Because it's
cool.
Basically
CPU per hour.
33% off during preview.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Nice.
So that's available to you. We've been pretty successful with that. So we keep running out of reserved instances. So we've just added a bunch of new capacity for shared instances and reserved instances in our East US data center.
Cool.
There should be more small instances available for people who are interested.
Nice.
And we're also announcing a new data center in West US.
Awesome.
So we'll actually have a brand new data center running with Windows Azure website.
Nice.
So again, you have the options.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we get asked about all the time, I think I mentioned it earlier, is the CNAME.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to use a custom domain name, you have to have a reserved instance at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to go downscale to an extent when we introduce our shared paid version. Again, I don't have the data as of now. And we are also looking at supporting A record so folks can have their naked domain name instead of www something.
Cool. Nice.
That's coming very, very soon
awesome.
As well. So I think this is kind of concluding this presentation about the deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions or specific issues?
Not that I can think of. You've mentioned the page share, which I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. Can't wait for that to come out.
I want to make a general comment about the scaling options. We have scale out and scale up, and they both do really good things. The only other potential option in nature would be diagonally scaling, which would be both scaling up and out at the same time.
That's true.
Well, you can actually do that, right? Because you can go and get a reserved instance and then get more instances of that. So you actually...
There we go.
Nice.
Yeah,
we support diagonal scaling.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
So we've invented a whole new different method of scaling. That's awesome.
Who knows what you'll get in your next episode?
Oh, no, really. You'll get zigzag scaling or something. Well, I appreciate the deep dive. A lot of that is actually kind of clarifies some stuff to me. One of the items being I've tinkered around in the, I think it's a application host.config file for IIS a few times. And what you've done here is you sort of pointed out that you mitigate the need for that file by having IIS actually go to SQL rather than go to the actual file itself.
Correct. So you kind of generate this file on the fly.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. So it's kind of underpinning.
Yeah. One of the things you said you're going to mention was how environment variables get sucked into the instances.
Yeah, that's a great question. You want to take a 2-minute break? We can do a demo of that.
Sure.
Okay, so thanks for this question. That's another kind of more advanced topic that we've talked about in the past. Basically, in .NET, what we do is we can inject app settings to the environment. Mm-hmm. So I'll show a very quick example, even not with boring you with the Visual Studio part of it, is basically we have this application here. This is just a vanilla kind of ASP.NET application. And what we do here is we expose two application variables. So these are exposed here. If you're familiar, we have the configure tab on my website. They're expressed here as app settings. So we have the site title and the site prefix, and the code here essentially just pulls them from web.config, from the configuration component. Now, if I ran this on my client, I would see whatever my web.config file has. In this case, it will actually take them directly from here. So if we'll go ahead and say, we'll change this to say channel 9 is awesome. I can't spell, but you guys get the drift. And we'll go ahead and save that. Basically, what's going to happen is, if you remember, we've discussed the DWAS. So the DWAS is now getting a change notification message from the database because we went ahead and changed this. And the next time we will load the website, it will go and inject these settings into memory. So I'm going to go back into this guy and do kind of a control F5 to get it to refresh. And we should see in a moment that channel 9 is awesome. What happened here is that we got a full reload of the website.
Awesome.
So this looks like a very mundane demo, but the value of this is very high if you think about DevOps scenarios, right? So if I develop on my client and I want to write into my local database, it's all great, I can do that. In production, I can point to the real database, and then I can maintain these connection strings or this type of configuration information or secrets, like maybe the key to a storage account or what have you. I can maintain that on the website.
Nice.
So little things that you can do with those Azure websites.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone's come across a scenario where they accidentally uploaded their web.config file and completely put their local test database connected instead of nothing works. So this definitely enables a nice scenario where you've now separated the development and the deployment server. Just by having a lot of your configuration settings stored right on the server itself.
For stacks that are not .NET, like PHP and Node.js, these are actually environment variables. So they're exposed as environment variables, and you can get the same functionality.
Yeah, nice. I actually wrote a blog post on that showing how to do it with both PHP and Node.js.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think we've done a demo similar to this on the show before. And I believe if you were to download your web config file right now, even though you've changed the actual app setting, if you were to download your web config file through FTP, it'll still be what it was when you uploaded it. You don't actually change the file.
Correct.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, you'll see whatever I put there in my development environment.
Nice. Cool. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know that you have at least a dozen meetings to run off to, so we'll go ahead and let you go now. But great show. Awesome deep dive into the product. If you've been wondering how it works, now you know. So that's good stuff.
And knowing is half the battle.
It is. It is indeed. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Not really. Just thanks a lot for joining us. This was very, very helpful.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. See you again next week.